I was asked to tell you about Ludwig von Mises, the man. I most willingly agreed that I shall not talk to you about him as my man, for you all know that. I want to tell you about the man in terms of his personality. In this sense, he was first of all a human being, concerned about the state of the world, and foremost, he was a fighter. I would like to say, as Hamlet says, when he talks to Horatio about his father, he was a man, take him all in all, I shall not look upon his like again. For 5 years, he fought in the First World War because he considered it his duty to follow the call to arms of his native country, which, as you all know, was Austria. In those 5 years, he had to fight the troops of the Tsar of Russia. And this military fighting was followed all through his life by fighting the Russian communists with his pen, his lectures, and his books. He did not hate the Russian people. He hated socialism, which the Russian people were forced to accept. For 64 years, since the Russian Revolution, the Russian people have had no opportunity to learn the truth and enjoy the sweet feeling of liberty. I often wonder what Russia would be like today if my husband's books had circulated freely in that country. All through my husband's work, there were four topics which, like a leading melody in a symphony by Mozart or Beethoven, were the subjects of his writings. He fought against communism, he fought against inflation, he fought for freedom of the individual, and he fought for free enterprise. And the more my husband wrote, the harder he fought for his ideas, the more admirers and the more enemies he got. Most of the admirers had worked in the world of free enterprise and understood what he was saying. Most of his enemies came from academia. As long as his opponents fought in the open, he didn't mind. But when they fought behind his back, he had no way to fight back and answer them and explain his ideas. Ideas which were too conservative for some critics and too radical for others. Professor Hayek once wrote, and I quote, "I cannot help smiling when I hear Professor Mises described as a conservative. There could not have been anything more revolutionary, more radical than his appeal for reliance on freedom. To me, Professor Mises is and remains above all a great radical, an intelligent and rational radical, but nonetheless a radical on the right lines." Unquote. And although Professor Hayek called him a radical, Ludwig von Mises was never an anarchist. Professor Hayek was one of my husband's most brilliant and devoted pupils. He is my husband's most eminent follower, a scholar who not only understands thoroughly all of my husband's work, but who has struck out on his own into many new paths of learning and is now world famous as an economist, a social philosopher, and winner of the Nobel Prize. Those of you who have read the book My Years with Ludwig von Mises may remember how Professor Hayek must have been referring to that Nobel Prize when 25 years ago he toasted Ludwig von Mises at a dinner in my husband's honor in New York. On that occasion, Professor Hayek said to my husband, and I quote, "You have shown a relentless consistency and persistence in your thought, even when it led to unpopularity and isolation. You have for long not found the recognition from the official organization of science which was your due. You have seen your pupils reap some of the rewards which were due to you, but which envy and prejudice have long withheld." How prophetic were Professor Hayek's words in 1956. He himself was to win the Nobel Prize 18 years later. Perhaps now that socialism has failed so flagrantly all over the world, even in Sweden and Poland, the Nobel Committee will see fit to make a posthumous award to the teacher of one of its own laureates, and thus reward a scholar whose achievements were long overlooked. I do know that my husband would have been pleased and proud to have been present to see his brilliant pupil Friedrich von Hayek awarded the Nobel Prize, which had been denied to himself. I wrote this to Professor Hayek immediately after I heard about his nomination, for Ludwig von Mises was never envious of the honors bestowed upon others. He had a quiet, unassuming confidence that his economic theories were unassailable. He had tested them with his razor-sharp mind. Nor was he possessed of any intellectual arrogance which might have held envy or contempt for those who extended his basic ideas to areas he had not yet reached. On the contrary, in fact, he predicted the future progress of economic science by scholars building upon his own work, just as he had given credit to Menger and Böhm-Bawerk, whose labors he himself had begun to build his own great work. Yet, he never feared to contend against economic error, no matter how popular it was or how powerful were the persons advancing erroneous theories and dangerous policies. He would not give an inch to any argument he thought to be in error. As humble and self-effacing as he was in his personal conduct, and as reasonable and cautious in debate, without personal prejudice to those who failed to understand him, he was absolutely uncompromising on principles he was convinced were true. He would have appreciated greatly the honor you are paying him today. But as grateful as he would have been, and as I am, for this expression of admiration and affection, I imagine he would have been even more pleased if you, the scholars, would enter into a serious discussion of some of his books. Let's say, The Theory of Science of Money and Credit, and Socialism, which, incidentally, just have been republished in beautiful new editions by the Liberty Fund. And I imagine he would have been even still more pleased if out of these centenary meetings there would develop a movement for the creation of a new society, a society which might perhaps be called the Ludwig von Mises Society, a select society of scholarly minds from all disciplines and from all ends of the earth, men and women whose common bond is a fervent devotion to human freedom, and whose members share a common conviction that Austrian economic theory must necessarily be the foundation for any economic policies consistent with the attainment of human freedom. The forerunner of such a society was, in fact, the outcome of that meeting in Switzerland to which Professor Hayek invited a few scholars in 1947. Finding a common bond in their discussions, they formed the Mont-Pèlerin Society. Ludwig von Mises was a founding member of that society and was very active in it for many years. And for several years, the Mont-Pèlerin Society served as a rallying point for scholars seeking to preserve freedom, a wellspring where they could come to refresh their knowledge and renew their intellectual inspiration. The Mont-Pèlerin Society has achieved much, and I hope it will achieve even more. However, over the years, as a society has grown, its character has changed. Its very size and the expansion of its membership and guest list has altered its intimacy, its intensity, and the quality of its discussions. This is not my judgment. It was my husband's feelings in his later years, which he often expressed to me and about which I wrote already in my book. Typical of his personal modesty and humility, he expressed that feeling only to his most close and most intimate friends. As Professor Hayek himself said some years ago, and I quote, "The Mont-Pèlerin Society has changed, and it never will be the same again." Certainly, with the widening interest, the Austrian economics that we have witnessed recently, there's room for one more society dedicated to freedom, one more society devoted to emphasizing that school of economics which more and more economists believe is most compatible with freedom. In all modesty, I can say that this idea of a new society is not mine. Several of my husband's followers have mentioned this idea to me over the years since my husband passed away. I think they longed for the meeting of scholarly minds from many disciplines, the natural well as well as the social sciences, all studying freedom through the science which unites all human actions. revolution, the science of economics. In this, they reflect the thinking of Ludwig von Mises himself. For Ludwig von Mises was far more than an eminent economist. He understood history as few historians understand it. He was learned in psychology, philosophy, law, and government. He had knowledge, yes, but all his intellectual, creative energy was directed toward one goal: freedom. Freedom for himself and for all mankind. And steadfastly he devoted all his mental, moral, physical, and spiritual powers toward that goal. And for this, he sacrificed so much. If I would be allowed to expose one wish for a birthday present given to him, which I myself could not give, and which I express already in my book, it would be the English language publication of all of his books, essays, lectures, articles, into one single memorial collection. This would indeed be a great challenge, a great task, and a great achievement for free enterprise. Such a publication would have made him far happier than the single season ticket for the Metropolitan Opera, which I gave him many years ago, and which, in my memory, was the only present which really gave him pleasure. This summer, I returned for the first time to a place where I often been with my husband before. And when I walked alone, where I so often have walked with him together, I felt his presence. I felt as if he were with me, talking to me. I felt his love and encouragement, urging me to do what I can to further the influence of his work. But I'm approaching the last years of my life and I'm not a scholar. The torch of economic freedom and human liberty in all its aspects must be passed on to future generations by scholars dedicated to the high ideals to which Ludwig von Mises devoted all his long and creative life. And now, I say goodbye. On behalf of my husband and for myself, I say thank you for listening to me. Thank you very, very much.